This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 24th of November, 1954. The title of this lecture is Following Orders. This lecture is 35 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Let me let you in on something about this process. It is done between an auditor and a pre-clear. Now, you just think I'm being clever. But let's look this over and recognize that although you may have a complete diagram of how to build a rheostat converter of ergsipples, you will never convert any ergsipples unless the machinery is there in company with the diagram, you understand? I mean, we could make a lot of lines on a piece of paper that would be the most perfect circuit ever made, or from the standpoint of the Atomic Energy Commission, the most perfect thing that ever happened to man, something that would obliterate him utterly. And we could make this machine on paper, and there it would sit on paper, but unless we put, paralleling that diagram, the proper copper wires, cogs, hoppers, feeders, belts and motive powers, why this perfect thing wouldn't happen to mankind, right? You'd get no action. Last night, your worthy instructor and I were doing a little brain rattling. I rattled his more than he rattled mine. In fact, I audited him. That's why this morning he looks alert. And I fixed him up pretty well. I even ran his comm lags flat. Quite remarkable. I mean, I acted right according to the school book. He's getting to be a purist, by the way. He insists on such things as comm lags being knocked flat, all this kind of thing. Well, all right. We had a process. Now, the process was laid out on a piece of paper, you might say. But until the machinery of an auditor and a pre-clear occurred, this process didn't do a thing, did it? Now, it sounds just like I'm completely overstressing a point. But I'm not. Because I said an auditor and a pre-clear, didn't I? Well, the definition of a pre-clear today is someone whose ability is to be raised by processing. That's what a pre-clear is. And an auditor today is a person who is there to raise the ability of the pre-clear. And if we in any way alter these definitions, we discover that if we had the opening procedure of the pearly gates, nothing would happen in the auditing session. Now, what I'm laboring here is the technique isn't going to do a darn thing for you as long as it sits there in a design form. It's just not going to do a thing. It not only won't bite you, it also won't work for you. Until we move over the top of this diagram, an auditor who is technically equipped, who is looking, who is observing, who is acting, and who has as his goal the improvement of the ability of the pre-clear. Well, we've got to have this unit here. We can't move a psychoanalyst in here, you understand, on this diagram and expect it to work. Not a psychiatrist, not a medical doctor. These people have a very limited look by their training. I'm not just being funny. I mean, they do have a limited view, extremely limited. They do not have, for instance, such a thing as our auditor's code. And every part of that code is necessary if you're going to make this machine diagram function. All right, so we have to have an auditor there. And an auditor is somebody who raises somebody else's ability by processing, or by example or conduct or anything else you want to say, but he raises somebody else's ability, and he is peculiarly trained. He is particularly trained to look, to notice, to hear, to observe the behavior of the person he is operating on. So as soon as we got him there, why, we've got part of our machinery set up. But do you know, this will sound equally weird to you, do you know that the machine is not complete till you get a preclear there? Now that sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? But it's about time I mentioned it to you, because there's many an auditor who is perfectly equipped who neglects to put a preclear there, but in the scarcity of preclears, self-audits. But it's not a function of the auditor. He hasn't got enough preclears to work on, and so he self-audits. In other words, he's trying to be both sides of this machine. Won't work. We've got to put a preclear there before we have this machine in operation. And your preclear is somebody, anybody, who is in any kind of a state or condition of beingness, who is complacent, pugnacious, or peculiar, or normal, or able, or anything else. He doesn't have to have any special training. Nothing is demanded of the preclear. He is the thing which is no responsibility in this machine. But the funny part of it is the machine won't work without him. Now, let me press this home to you. Someday you might get into this situation. This machine is not complete in the absence of a preclear. So, there sits the auditor, and he knows all these processes. And if he forgets it's necessary to have a preclear there, the actual fact is he will start self-auditing to some slight degree. And he's not self-auditing because he needs to be audited. He's simply self-auditing because he wants to audit something, and there's nothing there to audit, so he will set up a machine to audit. The most remarkable thing would happen with some of these auditors that do it if you simply ask them to waste preclears in brackets. And you would turn on the darndest automaticity you ever wanted to look at. Yeah, those preclears would just be going out in all directions in a roar. Waste preclears. Believe me, could they waste preclears? Now, any time an auditor has a lot of trouble out in this society getting preclears, it's just because they're too scarce. When he's having trouble getting preclears, he's right next door to self-auditing, inspecting his own brain. I don't know to what profit or benefit he possibly could do this. I have one case on record which self-audited for 3 years with absolutely no improvement. That's pretty good, isn't it? I finally, when I caught up with this auditor and found out what he was doing, because he was also being static in a class, you know, he was not moving in any direction. And I just grabbed him by the nape of the neck and I said, how would you go about wasting some preclears? I might as well have pushed the button on the floodgates of Niagara, you see. I mean, preclears started to fly out in all directions in mock-up form, and his occlusions went on and off again and on. And he couldn't bury preclears fast enough. He filled up oceans full of preclears and trying to drown enough preclears. And he got the whole universe completely jam-packed tight with wasted preclears and didn't know what to do then, but had the happy idea, which I didn't give him because I was being an auditor, that very happy idea of building another physical universe in order to fill it up with preclears. And thus it went. And all of a sudden he got up to a point where, wasting them in brackets, where he actually could have one preclear. It was a midget who was impossible of recovery. People who are their own best pre-clears are interesting. So you see, in order for this auditor to go on functioning, you've got to have a pre-clear there in the machinery, right? Now, this sounds awful darn elementary, but by golly, you'd be surprised how often these elements are overlooked. Now, what's the next thing that's got to happen? A communication must occur. That's the next thing. Now, you could make the communication occur by mimicry or by a specialized mimicry technique. You could make it occur by asking what his mother's maiden name was, or what his present time problem was, by various many means you could make it appear. For instance, you could make it occur by a pressure on his hand and getting him to press your hand in return. A communication has begun just by doing this. All right. The communication must occur, and then that communication must follow up a gradient scale and must go fairly rapidly. You must get into a better and more intimate communication channel both ways. And then another factor comes up. By golly, this case is not going to go any place unless it can follow your orders. Now, you might take a few edges off the case. You might snap the case up there to 2.0 on the tone scale. You might do a lot of things for this case and so forth, but this case is not going to really get out there and roar. This case is not really going to stop avoiding and so forth unless this case can follow orders. Well, everybody knows that it's utter death to follow orders. This is the one thing which must never happen. What you do with orders is resist them. That's what you do with orders. Change them, convert them, pervert them, make circuits with them, but don't follow them. Actually, the salvation of any individual is the ability with a free and clear mind and heart to follow orders. I knew the happiest professional soldier. There are a lot of people in armies, they always call them professional privates. And I knew the happiest professional private you ever wanted to look into. This guy was a model. He had a model service record. He'd been a private for 16 or 20 years, and then a war came along, and that was just another war to him. He was in the Marine Corps. And the Marine Corps has a lot more professional privates than the Army. This is no aspersion against an armed service, since I never considered the Army an armed service. The professional private in this particular case was a very happy man. There was nothing wrong with this boy. He had no ambition to become a private first class, and had not had for 20 years. Completely out of his reach to realize the idea. He said to himself, you know, private first class, who wants to be a private first class? One time somebody played a dirty trick on him, realizing he'd been in the Corps for about 12 years, and they made him a first sergeant for a little while. And the only blot on his record was a little bit upsetting to him, because he'd had to go out and invest in enough whiskey to get drunk enough to beat up a shore patrol in order to get busted back to private again, and he hadn't enjoyed the drunk, because he was not a drinking man. Now, here is the case of somebody who was not pushing around in life, but actually who was leading a rather happy life. This man was not a model simply because he was staying still, but he wasn't trying to get anything done. He was just trying to be what he could be. Now, this man's company got a change of captains, and during the war there were a lot of peculiar things that walked in that had belts and things on that were called captains. Say nothing of what walked in that was called a lieutenant. And when this thing walked in, he started issuing orders in all directions, and this professional private was the only one in the company who didn't go into a high, frantic state of mutiny. He followed the captain's orders. Did just exactly what the captain said. You know what happened to Captain? He was shipped back to Washington hurriedly. He couldn't do close order drilling. See, it was not above this captain to have said, well, he'd been a lawyer or something, and to have said to the company while it was standing there in close order formation, it would not have been above him to say, squads east or west, as the case may be. And this private did everything that he saw on the bulletin board, and he did everything that the captain said on the drill field, and the captain all of a sudden was recognized by the major, the colonel, the brigadier general, and others of even lesser importance in the area to be nuts. The rest of the company, protesting like mad, covered up for the captain, but didn't realize they were covering up. They were not obeying the captain's orders, were they? You many times discover a preclear who will cover up for the auditor. Many times. Actually, if he were really operating, he would simply follow the auditor's orders. And then even the auditor would see that something was wrong around here. You follow me? Now I'm giving you a rather strained point here. But when it comes to close order drill, you will find many a man is issuing a wrong order simply because he cannot bear to actually and actively direct his fellow man. Domination, control of another, are all push buttons to man. Actually, it does not demean a person one single bit to follow an order, but on the contrary, will demonstrate to him that he can at least follow an order. He can be in effect. Same thing, see? Follow an order, be in effect. If an individual can't be in effect, he will eventually wind up the effect of this whole universe. So by giving him orders and letting him follow those orders, persuading him to follow those orders, first giving him orders he can follow, and then making them tougher on him, calling more and more on his self-determinism and decision, we bring him up to a point where he sees that he does not have to avoid obedience. Because it is the avoidance of obedience, the fear of obedience, which winds man up a complete slave. Nobody was ever able to do anything to this private first class. With 20 years of service behind him, why, he got out, and I think he looked like a young man. I think he went down to Mexico or South America or someplace and became a professional private or a captain of the guards or general or something. But wars and everything else had simply rolled over this man's head, and yet he had had a marvelous time, and everybody thought he was a wonderful fellow. There's only one peculiarity: he couldn't be promoted. But he could follow orders. The other people there who wound up in the service as drunks and wound up as bums and wound up all shot up and wound up real unhappy and wound up very old men and so forth, they had to be a corporal. Why'd they have to be a corporal? Well, a corporal doesn't have to obey as many orders as a private. Having gotten to be corporals, they had to be sergeants. Why? Because a sergeant doesn't have to obey as many orders as a corporal. And having gotten to be sergeants, they couldn't rest until they got up there through top kick up to sergeant major of the battalion, since the only thing he has to do is write out orders for the major. And that's an optimum position. But don't ever say to me that you have seen a sane sergeant major. Because you haven't. These boys are real frantic. You get this avoidance of orders? It pushes a person into further and further identity. And the definition of a symbol is mass, meaning, and mobility. And resistance of orders pushes one into a position where he will not have to take orders. And this becomes his ambition, not to have to take orders, not to be in effect. When the joker in the deck is, he can't possibly be injured. It's utterly impossible to injure a Thetan. The only one that can injure a Thetan is himself. The only crime a Thetan can do is against himself, by denying himself. I've looked over the whole field of ethics and discovered that is a fact, that the only crime which a fellow can commit in the field of ethics is the denial of self. From that one point, all other errors stem. Nobody can do anything to a Thetan. He can do something to himself by simply changing his mind and saying, I am in some other way. Energy can't do anything to him unless he says so. It all has to be with his consent. But when he turns around and starts to face the whole of existence and saying, I can be harmed and therefore I must not be in effect ever. I can only be cause, I must never be in effect. At that moment, he permits himself to be trapped. Then he has to become a corporal and a sergeant and a sergeant major. Then he has to become a Congressional Medal of Honor man. You know, if a guy was really trying to get the war on the road, he certainly wouldn't go around and, to the medal window and keep asking for medals, would he? A medal received after the battle doesn't help the battle a bit. He would simply go on and fight the battle. The Army Air Force, what I think in the last war was the only service that actually did install a medal window. After a mission, they went by and got their medals. They should have been bushel baskets. Anyway, they're all hump shoulders now, you know. Now, this condition was so bad when I tried to hawk some naval medals and so forth, the hawk shop man didn't know they had issued any to the Navy. He thought the only people they'd issued them to was the Army Air Force. I think it was the Air Force by that time. I forget what war, what planet. it was ever thus. All right, the ability to receive an order is something a preacher has to learn he has. Once he really learns he can receive an order without being destroyed, he has done a tremendous jump up the line. And of course he will go through very many vacillations and bounces and so forth, but he will never get as bad off as the moment when he believed that he couldn't take an order, that he couldn't receive a direction. Have you ever seen anybody backing out of a garage and you said, move a little bit further over this way, you're coming close to that telephone pole, and have them look at you and glare? You ever done this? Have you ever given a sales girl directions on how to wrap up your package? Saying, pull the paper out just a little bit further from the roller before you tear it. Yeah, at the same time, we could see that either of these people that reacted in that way were relatively unhappy people. What were they unhappy about? How would you like to go around all the time, looking around every corner, predicting that every street, that every town, that every office might have somebody in it who would give you an order? How would you like to go around through life predicting this awful thing that somebody would have to, was liable to give you an order? Thing for you to do would be to get stupider and stupider and more important until you got to be at least a general or politician in society or a businessman. Now, there is the condition of your preclear in HC. But let's look at this machine again. Machine I started talking to you about. The auditor has to be willing to give directions. And the auditors who fail are auditors who are no longer willing to give orders. And those are the auditors that fail. And those are the auditors that change orders, that change techniques, that foul up preclears. Now there's a whole series of buttons in the R2 range, and they're written backwards in the printed edition of the auditor's handbook. And the first one is pan determinist, and the next one's fighting, the next is must and mustn't happen again, and the one just below that is repair. That's a scale. That's a gradient scale of processes. And an auditor who's not willing to control a preclear is not going to make a preclear well. So regardless of whether or not the preclear is unwilling or willing to follow orders, our machine here, the seeing, this act, is not functional unless the auditor is willing to give orders. So that's an integral part of the machine. Nothing demanded of the preclear at all. You're not even demanding he'll change. He will. But something is demanded over here of the auditor, that he be willing to give orders. And do you know that an auditor to give orders has to be willing to receive them? So an auditor, in order to run something like opening procedure of HC or opening procedure by duplication, would have to be very, very definitely able to receive and give orders. I've known officers, by the way, that wouldn't give anybody an order unless they would do it themselves. You know, that old philosophy. That's not a bad philosophy. But I've seen them that wouldn't give orders. They just did it themselves. You notice the difference? In a couple of cases in Dianetics and Scientology organizations, it has been necessary, actually, to finally do something active in separating out an individual who was in this condition, who did it all themselves, you know. They couldn't give orders to anybody else. They wouldn't let anybody else in on the act or let anybody else help. They sort of hogged all the work. And although they were very busy people and looked very, very active and so forth, they were actually fouling up their entire environment because they wouldn't give out enough information to permit anybody else to do any work. They wouldn't let anybody else do any work. If they saw any work come in anybody's direction, because they would not give orders to these other people to do this, they would do it themselves. See? And then they would go around. Also, by the way, a characteristic of this is how overworked they are. They come around and tell you how overworked they are after they've done it all themselves. There's many a young girl who was making a beautiful wreck out of her marriage, whose sole modus operandi has been the fact that mama was so violent on the subject of having to do all the housework, you know, and would drive the girl off from doing housework. Drive her off from doing anything around the house. You know, mama's just hogging all the work in the place. And then the girl gets married and doesn't know what to do, because she realizes she picks up that mop, she'll get her toes stepped on. Get that? Well, here's self-auditing. Look at this. Auditor won't give the direct order to the preclear. So the preclear is actually less and less there. And finally, the only person the auditor can give orders to is his own auditing preclear machinery. And he'll start to self-audit. Why does he start to self-audit? Well, it's a real simple mechanism. He's the only one who can do it. You see that? Same thing as mama being the only one who could do housework, or this manager of a section gang being the only one who could really wield a shovel. Same deal. Eventually, the auditor is doing both the preclear and the auditor role. The machine doesn't work in that fashion. One of the handiest methods I know of getting anybody over this type of frame of mind and making a complete setup here, whereby you have an auditor, you have a preclear, and you have techniques, and everybody doing his job, whether he knows he's supposed to or not. The auditor knows he's supposed to, but the preclear goes ahead and does his job whether he knows he's supposed to or not. We can always predict the behavior of preclear one way or the other. Is for the auditor to get a vast amount of experience in ordering people around. He doesn't have to do it on a 1-5 basis. He doesn't have to be ornery about it. He can be perfectly relaxed and be obeyed. An auditor who is worried about giving orders to other people is, of course, somehow or other going to fluff. He'll fix it up so he fluffs. You know, he either be completely absent from sessions, or he'll be, or just any number of ways that he could flub. He'll give the command in such a way that it's inaudible. He will introduce a communication lag. The preclear will answer the question, and the auditor will put a communication lag in. This is simply an unwillingness to deliver orders to the preclear one way or the other. One of the best ways to get anybody over this would be with opening procedure 8C. And that's a wonderful technique for an auditor. Completely aside from what it'll do to a creeper, it's a wonderful technique for an auditor. So I want you to observe this in yourself. How willing are you to give orders to people? And when you're running 8C, how willing are you to give these directions? If you have a resistance toward auditing at all, no deeper significance can be read into it than an unwillingness to give orders and directions and change another human being. That's the total of activity that can occur that causes re-stimulation, upsets the auditor, and so on. So are you willing to give orders to a preclear? If you're not, then the machine, called an auditing session, is not in operation. And you as an auditor will wind up eventually with a lot of self-auditing. You'll do it yourself rather than give orders to somebody else. Therefore, every auditor under training ought to run one global amount of 8C. More therapeutic for the auditor than the frequent. Now, it's a funny thing about 8C. The only thing that really ever goes wrong with HC is nobody ever runs it long enough on a preclear who's having trouble. Preclear's having some trouble, and the auditor simply does not run enough HC on him. That's the one thing you can say about opening procedure HC throughout. Two things you can say. One is that it demonstrates clearly to the auditor his own unwillingness to give orders. How does he recover from it? To give orders. And two, it demonstrates, as far as the preclear is concerned, that he can receive orders. And the one thing you can say about it in general is the fact that it is never really given long enough by an auditor, unless he simply gets down and sets it up into a bracket, which is increments of 15 hours. You give 8C at this kind of a shotgun bracket, you say, well, when you think of 8C, think of some increment like 15 hours. You know, I'm going to give this guy some 8C. You don't give him 2 minutes of 8C. You can bring him up to present time or do other things with it. But if you're going to sit down and give somebody 8C, you just have to think in terms of 15 hours, that's all. You have to think in lots of 8C. You know why I tell you that? It's been our experience in the advanced clinical course units. But many a boy sat halfway through one of these units, or three quarters of the way through one of these units, without improvement, until right just before the last dog was hung, we suddenly got hold of the auditor, signed him, got him with a nap on the neck, and said, from here on, you will give nothing but textbook 8C to that preclear. Nothing but textbook 8C, no variation. There. And of course, we have to grab him and put him back on the rails the first four or five times that he was auditing, you know. And then the next thing you know, I could just sit there and cry. I knew who was, what was happening, because you'd see somebody's skin color all of a sudden become alive. You would see their ability to comprehend coming on up. Actually, you receive orders. And you would see these various other symptoms, and the next thing you know, the fellow would be working. His ability would be enormously increased just because he'd received, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 hours of HC. That's what we did in the later advanced clinical course units to anybody who was lagging. We would set them up to see that somebody was lagging, he was dragging his heels, and we would just set down and give him enough HC, that's all. This textbook 8C, steps A, B, and C, we find out that very often in auditing session, auditors have given them part C, lots of part C, but they've never had part A run on them. They couldn't do part C, but they dub it in somehow, and then we start to run part A on them, they get sick at their stomachs. One of the boys, by the way, folded up, collapsed on the floor, and began to vomit. Part A, opening procedure 8C. Cute. All right. That's what I'd like to tell you about this 8C, all of the factors that you might be interested in it with it. The information I've given you might do you some good, but the probability is you knew it already. And the fact is, you should have. Okay?